The last word on Today FM with Matt Cooper.
Okay, I asked how many people were looking forward to the return of the Late Late Show. Everyone is texting in about the pubs, but nobody's texting in about the return of the Late Late Show. Jennifer Gannon and Joe O'Shea are with us for our weekly TV spot. Jennifer, how difficult do you think is it going to be for the Late Late Show to continue drawing in the audiences at home if it doesn't have the vibe of the live audience in studio with it?
I mean, we've seen it kind of earlier on when they were still broadcasting, and it was a very strange environment just to have Ryan there and the guests there and then no response. And I don't know if they want to do what they did with the MTV VMAs this week, where they had canned like applause and canned laughter and stuff when the awards were going on. I think that's weird. So I don't think they'll follow that route, but I do think it may lose something special about it. But then again, with regards to kind of live performances, when they have bands on or comedians, the Late Late audience aren't known for being the most responsive. So I don't think it'll make that big a difference where that's concerned.
They rarely get out of their feet cheering the bands as they sing, do they?
They don't really, no, they don't really. And the same with comedians. I think the jokes go down like a fart in a spacesuit most of the time when they're on. But I think, you know, with the whole one for everybody in the audience, you're missing that. You're missing the interaction between Ryan and people. So I think it will be kind of difficult. But I don't think, I mean, I don't know if it's going to change the Late Late per se, because it's still the concentration on the guests themselves. So it might sound a little bit different and it might be a little bit strange to begin with, but I think people will just have to get used to it.
Okay, it's the 12th year, Joe, for Ryan Tubridy presenting the programme. I saw him quoted during the week as saying that it's like doing a radio show now on television, which that's an interesting, if not necessarily a take that you would agree with. What do you think can we look forward to, particularly given that things like the toy show is going to be very difficult to do later in the year of social distancing?
Yeah, the toy show will be very difficult, but this is the 59th season of the Late Late Show. And I tell you one thing, they're coming back with a bang as far as their guests are concerned. And that's what's going to make or break the show in this run. They won't have the audience, but content is king, as people are fond of saying in the media business. And they have a really, really strong lineup tonight. I mean, like, they've got Micheál Ó Muirchertaigh. They've got Ellen Glynn and Sarah Feeney, the cousins who were famously and, thank God, rescued off the coast of Galway after they drifted out in paddleboards. They've got the guys who rescued the man. They've got the daughter of Dr. Saeed Waqar Ali, who tragically died in July after contracting COVID-19. You know, they've got a lot of really good guests on. They've also got the best Irish band of all time, Frank and Walters, are going to be on performing live. So, you know, if they can... The energy is going to be difficult for Ryan. And when he's talking about doing it as if it's a radio show, you can kind of get what he's saying. The audience are not there, but if they can keep getting a good caliber of guests and keep reflecting what is going on. They've also got Dr. Rona Glynn is on tonight as well, talking about, you know, where we are with COVID. So if they can keep it relevant, if they can keep a really strong guest lineup, and if Ryan can do his job, which is difficult at the best of times, but do it without an audience, which is even more difficult, then they've really got a good future. I think a lot of people are looking forward to this coming back tonight. It's a sign of some sort of normality, some sort of comfort viewing, some sort of chance for everybody to get together and have some sort of national experience. So it's a lot of people who are looking forward to it. And I think with its calibre of guests, it'll be a really strong return.
Now, tell us, Jennifer, about the deal that Meghan Markle and her husband, Harry Windsor, have signed with Netflix.
Well, yeah, I think Meghan and Harry, they're kind of taking a leaf from the Obamas' playbook, and they're attempting to parlay their strange position as public figures into this media empire. They're keen to be producers rather than appear on camera. So it's very much like the deal the Obamas have made with Netflix with their Higher Ground production company. And the Obamas have created those documentaries that are highly acclaimed, like Crip Camp and The American Factory. And they're also actually producing a feature about Frederick Douglass. So I can see Meghan and Harry are going to try and emulate this. And I'd say their focus is going to be more on, you know, the philanthropic endeavours and documentaries about mental health and climate change and conservation, which are all like topics that are very close to the couple's hearts. And this is not them beating down Hollywood's door like it's been portrayed in some parts of the media, but I think it's rather just this attempt to capitalise on the public interest in them, but in a more positive way. And it's a positive spin on it rather than anything else.
Yeah, but what do you make of this, Joe, given that they have little or no relevant experience in documentary making, that they managed to pick up this deal? I mean, would you expect that when push comes to shove, they will be expected to appear to make sure that people end up watching the stuff?
That's the interesting thing, and you can see why they're not appearing on screen. They're already losing a bit of their mystique, losing their, you know, status, their official status as royals, whatever that means. But the risk that they run, of course, is just becoming celebrities, just ordinary celebrities. The further they move away from the royal family, and if they appear on screen, they're just TV presenters. They will want to be behind the scenes. They will want to use their influence, but you could see Netflix, if things, you know, if they don't kind of get the numbers they want and if they are paying them all the money in the world, Netflix may put them under pressure to say, listen, guys, you're going to have to start fronting these shows. You know, we're paying you this money. You're going to have to get out there. It's very hard to see how they can box themselves off from having to play the game as celebrities. If they are going into that sphere, if they're going into TV production, they will have to eventually play the game. And once they do that, you know, like I said, they don't pick the special aura that these royals are supposed to have begins to drift away.
Okay, let's talk about a couple of these big shiny flow shows that are so popular, such as Strictly Come Dancing and Dancing with the Stars. First of all, Jennifer, tell us about Carol Baskin joining Dancing with the Stars in the US.
Yeah, I think Tiger King just feels like it was a million years ago. But it's safe to say that there is still interest in the main players of the documentary. I won't give her full name that Joe Exotic gives her, but yeah, Carol Baskin is joining the cast of American Dancing with the Stars. And I, for one, cannot wait to see what Leopard Prince creations they're going to make her wear and what songs are going to make her dance to, like Eye of the Tiger, Man Eater, Killer Queen. Like, the possibilities are endless. And, you know, Tiger King, it's just not going away anytime soon. It has been this massive phenomenon, and it was announced this week that Saturday Night Live's Kate McKinnon, she's going to be playing Carol Baskin in a series about the documentary. And I don't know why this is needed, why there needs to be a fictional, like a dramatization of the documentary, but it's going to happen, and there are going to be people out there that want to watch it. And there was rumours that Nicolas Cage is going to be playing Joe Exotic too, but I don't know if it's in this production.
Perfect.
But I would love
absolutely
to see
perfect
that. Nicolas Cage is just closer to the madness of the documentary itself, I think, and it'd be well worth watching. But I do think Dancing with the Stars have this huge coup with getting Carol Baskin on it. Whether or not she'll go out in the first week remains to be seen. But she's kind of, it's weird because she is like this, you know, Z-list celebrity, but she is somebody that people have a weird interest in now. So why not do it? Yeah.
And what do you make, Joe, of the Strictly Come Dancing's decision that they will have a same-sex couple contestants?
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, it's Olympic boxer Nicola Adams, who is a fantastic athlete. You know, it's a double gold medal at the London 2012 and the and Rio Olympics in 2016. And how long ago do those two Olympics seem right now? It's interesting. She says she actually suggested it. She said she wanted a female partner when the producers asked her to take part. And the producers said yes. So that's what we're going to see. Listen, it's great. We need representation, you know, of all kinds of people. And we live in a very diverse world now at the moment. So it's good to see representation, especially for young people who are going to be watching it as well. I was 20 years of age when homosexuality was decriminalised in this country. That's how recent that was, you know. And it's something that's important. It's good to see it happen. It's going to be interesting to see how the audience react. Last year, there were two male professionals danced one routine to an Emile Sandé song. And the BBC got 189 complaints from viewers who found it offensive. So it's going to create waves. It may turn off some of the audience, but it's a good step. It's positive. So you got to applaud it.
I don't know how people could complain. It's double the glam. You're going to get double the dresses. And as I went to an all-girls school and I did ballroom dancing in an all-girls school, and there was never any problem with two girls dancing. So if, you know, a bunch of kids can do it, I'm sure it's going to be fine with a group of professionals. There's no problem about that.
And of course, Joe, we also heard from Niall there in the 5 of 5 that the new season of Star Trek Discovery 3 is going to feature non-binary and transgender characters for the first time.
Yeah, I'm actually, I'll come out now as a Star Trek nerd, and I like Star Trek Discovery. It's It's kind of bonkers. It looks great. The storylines are all over, are mad, to be honest with you. They did have in the first two series, this is season three, they did have a gay couple in the first couple of series. That didn't seem to make big waves with Star Trek fans. And it does kind of keep with the ethos of the Star Trek world, the canon, you know, which was originally said way back in the 60s, broke a lot of taboos and talked a lot about kind of social issues and alluded to the Vietnam War and all that kind of stuff. So it's good. Star Trek 3 is going to have a transgender actor playing a transgender character. It's Ian Alexander, who's 19. He's actually been, if people know the OA, they'll know him as Buck Fu from that. So, you know, listen, it's another positive step. And yeah, it may offend some people, but I think actually my fellow Trekkies are not going to be too bothered about it all, because at this stage, it's not such a huge leap for mankind.
We've been looking forward on this programme to a show which we don't know if we're going to get here in Ireland, or if we do, if it'll come in advance of the US presidential election. It's the Comey Rule, which stars Jeff Daniels as Comey, but also features Brendan Gleeson as Donald Trump. There are reviews starting to come in from the United States. Before we hear about those, let's get a clip from the 2.5 minute trailer which has been released.
No one has ever succeeded like I have. This was not espionage. This was an attack.
You're gonna get clobbered, Chip.
Jim Comey, he's more famous than me.
Really looking forward to working with you. Let's take a picture.
We've now been presented the dossier concerning Russia and its connection to Trump.
Putin began cultivating Trump as an asset to help with real estate deals, hundreds of millions in loans.
It constitutes a real threat to national security.
Would you like to come over for dinner tonight? Just the two of us? Nobody gets treated as unfairly as I do. It's disgraceful.
Sir,
I need loyalty. I expect loyalty.
He certainly sounds the part as Brendan Gleeson, doesn't he, Joe?
He absolutely does. I really want to see this. You know, I really, really want to see it, because the reviews are in and they've been mixed. But a lot of praise for Brendan Gleeson. People saying, you know, he's the best thing in it. Variety was a bit on the fence about this, and that maybe would be the most respected of the reviewers. But they were saying that, you know, basically saying he was kind of, and actually was echoed, that Gleeson was kind of the best thing about it, and in some ways the worst thing about it. What they noted was that Gleeson got the voice down. He got the kind of the weird kind of mannerisms of Trump, and like he's kind of heavy, hunched over walk. And what all the reviewers said, and what they agreed, that what Gleeson really brought out was the menace of the man, which is sometimes overlooked in his kind of cartoonish, buffoonish kind of character. So, you know, Gleeson's getting a lot of praise. The series itself, the miniseries, has been lukewarmly received. But, you know, I think Irish people would just love a chance to see Brendan Gleeson as Trump, and hopefully we're going to get it.
Anything to add to that, Jennifer?
I think, to be honest, the best Trump I've ever seen is the drag queen, the Vivian, on the UK version of Drag Race, because it makes a total mockery of his vanity and the ego and how over the top and laughable he is. And I think it is going to be a rod on, you know, Brendan Gleeson's back, because it's very hard to make a drama out of this administration, because it comes off sounding like Stephen King's The Stand. It's too many worse nightmares and comical incidents combined. And I think everything feels like a parody, like we're too far through the looking glass for it to be anyway really affecting, because it's undercut by the surreal reality of it all. That's what I would worry about the drama in itself.
Okay, what, Jennifer, is your pick of the week?
My pick of the week is going to be what we're all really looking forward to, The Deceived, on Monday on Virgin Media 1 at 9 p.m. And we've been talking about this for a while, but it's finally here. It's the psychological thriller from Derry Girls' Lisa McGee about a young college student who embarks on an affair with her lecturer. And I've actually seen two episodes as a preview, and it wasn't what I was expecting at all. It starts off as a thriller, but there is a supernatural kind of element that creeps into it. And it's very like a gothic novel. It's a bit like, you know, Edgar Allan Poe meets like Rosemary's Baby. But I think it will keep people guessing. And there's a very intriguing story to it. And there is, yes, in case you're panicking, enough Paul Mescal to keep everyone happy. And he is actually brilliant in it, as subtle as ever.
Okay, that's a good recommendation. That's Monday, starting on Virgin Media One, The Deceived. What are you going for, Joe?
RT1, 9:30 on Monday as well. Love and Loss in the Pandemic. It's what it does. It does what it says on the tin. But it's billed as a powerful documentary featuring seven people who face the loss of a loved one in the midst of the ongoing pandemic emergency. I don't know if people are getting fatigue at this stage talking about COVID and dealing with it and facing it every day in our lives, everywhere you turn. But I think this documentary could kind of be cathartic for some people, and it could definitely kind of talk to them about maybe losses that they've suffered in their own lives. And I think, you know, these stories are going to be powerful. I think this is going to be something that people are going to want to see. And I think it's going to really make an impact with people. So it's Love and Loss in a Pandemic, RT1, 9:30 on Monday.
And thank you, Joe O'Shane, Jennifer Gannon. Thank you to the listener who says the Sky Atlantic plan to show the Comey Room on September 30th. So that is something to look forward to. Hopefully you can get confirmation. But thank you to the listener coming in on that.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Listen live, on air, from 4:30 weekdays on Today FM.